You're listening to the CISO Secret Podcast, brought to you by Checkpoint. And now welcome your host, James Azar.
Hello, folks. Welcome to another episode of the CISO Secret Podcast. Joining me today is a legend, Max Garcia. He is the CISO over at the NCR Banking Division. Max, what is happening? How are you doing, good sir?
I'm doing great. Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm doing magnificent. Thank you for joining the show. I'm very excited. For those watching and listening, one, make sure you subscribe. Number two, you earn a CPE for listening to me and Max banter for 40 minutes today. So I hope you stick through it. Somewhere in the episode, I'll put in a keyword that you can use to earn your CPE. It'll be on the link below. You click on the link to earn your CPE. You put in the keyword I give you. You get one CPE. Isn't that great? Like, I just love it. Listen, like, I wish more people would do that. So
it's like Christmas already.
It is. It's you know, given the fact that we're recording this on January 7th, today is actually Christmas for the Orthodox Christians. It's Christmas Day for them. Yep. Yesterday was Christmas Eve. I was looking at pictures from like Russia and the Ukraine and Eastern Europe, and you know, where Orthodox Christianity is predominant, and they were celebrating Christmas. It's like, oh wow, that's really cool. And it was snowing.
Yeah, and we have a team in Serbia, so I became aware of that earlier last week, that they were taking off, I think, because it was Christmas for them, so it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's Christmas, and then they celebrate New Year's January 13th.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So, like, the Orthodox calendar actually goes through with the birth of... it's not really, they don't call it the new year. It's actually really, really interesting. I got a whole lesson on it when I was in also like in Eastern Europe, right? So the Orthodox Christians believe that Jesus, because he was the year started after Christ was born, so they celebrate his birthday. They go, the birth is January 6th, and then they celebrate his bris, which is his bond with God, essentially, what every Jew goes through at 8 days, which is January 13th.
Right.
Very interesting.
So like a baptism time frame.
Well, yeah. Very much so. Very interesting. Either way. All right. Not the point of our podcast, but here's a fun fact. Max, a little bit about how you got started in security for our audience.
Well, probably like most CISOs these days, I mean, security is a very... young industry as it compares to many other industries. But I started out as a developer, software developer and a hardware developer background. And early on, you know, I didn't want to be soldering chips and together, and felt that there was a lot more opportunity in software. So I really took the software path through my initial career, did some work for the Texas Instruments on some black projects, which I have stories about black projects that I had to leave that pretty quickly. I just couldn't sit behind a wall and not talk about the exciting things I was doing. But after that, I went into some of the management aspects of software development, program management. So all very much on the developer side. And then I got an opportunity to kind of run a small private money transfers organizations, kind of a CTO role. So, I mean, you're a VP of IT, but you've got operations, you got desktops, you got all these things that are needed to run a business. And obviously security was a small piece of that. And when I first got there, they didn't have a person in this role. And so I was there cleaning up a few things, and then got into, we had a few systems that got malware on them and having to clean that up. So that kind of gave me my first intro into security. And you read a lot of it in the news, and that's how I feel it gained my interest on, you know, what can you do to help protect the assets? Because I saw the impact of the business that occurred because of it. We had to shut down systems. Our customers were impacted because of this malware. And figured I'd like to do more of it in a better capacity. So I started learning. I took some courses to become a certified CISO through EC Council. They had a course there. And I did that to just gain more knowledge on my background, because I did have development. I know how things are built. I then got some roles where I actually was leading the operations, the technical operations assistant. So now I've got, these are how these things are wired. This is how they work. And in my role prior to NCR with another private firm, I became the kind of the official CISO there to manage all the security aspects of that. You know, we're in money transfer, we're in banking industry, and that is obviously something our customers were very interested in, and ensuring that they had somebody accountable for security. So it was kind of a winding path that I ended up here. I never thought I would be, but I'm really enjoying being in this space.
Yeah, I love your background. I love the diversity of backgrounds of CISOs. There's no clear-cut path. Like, you know, lawyers, you want to be a lawyer, you go to law school, you take the bar, you become a lawyer. It's the same path. Yeah. Same path.
Yeah.
How'd you become a lawyer? Went to law school, took the bar, became a lawyer. In cyber, It's all over the place. Right. I mean, when I did Veteran November, it was one of those where listening to 30 different stories was very exciting for me, because it was 30 different paths. No, not one story was similar in 30 episodes, Max. Not one.
Yeah. That's fantastic. I mean, the diversity is I guess a unique thing of security too, because you need that, right? I mean, these threat actors are coming at you all kinds of different ways and different reasons, and you need that other diversity of thought to try to figure out, you know, what are the targets, you know, what are they after, so you know, how are these folks thinking, and it's a very interesting space to psychologically to understand what is going on with these folks on the other end.
It is, but it's a fun space because it keeps us on our toes, right? I want us to talk a little bit about, you know, cloud today, right? So one of the aspects of what COVID brought upon all of us was a buzzword that you and I have buried plenty of times in my famous buzzword graveyard, digital transformation, right? The most trending meme, I think, of 2020 when I looked at it from an IT perspective was, you know, they have the meme of in the boardroom, like, who led your digital transformation? Your CEO, your CTO?
Oh, yeah.
COVID-19. It's...
Yeah.
And so digital transformation, cloud migration has led to it's in full steam. I mean, I think there was a period in time where Microsoft Azure was out of data center space in Europe. Like, they were like, we can't onboard any customers. We can't even let you upgrade your accounts. We don't have any more room until we, you know, get more stuff in our data centers, which, by the way, I found really fascinating. Before I get into the question, when people are like, how could they run out of room in the cloud? And I'm like, well, a cloud's just a data center. And so data centers have capacity, right? It's not like one data center has all of the world's, like, data centers have, you know, a capacity that can only take so much. Then you've got to add more and more things to it. So, you know, let that be what it was. But you know, with cloud migrations at full swing and security teams are obviously trying to scramble and keep up with business, how do you look at your cloud migration security checklist? What was kind of your go-to on that?
Yeah, and I try to take a really basic level and work my way up into the stack, because, you know, we can use all these terms of cloud and digital transformation, but you know what? It's all about access, it's all about the assets that are in there, and it's accountability, who's running this stuff. So those are the three key areas that I look at initially in a cloud migration, is to look at those pieces, you know, upfront and try to set some baselines and policies around that. Because as you mentioned, everybody's doing this. The access to these systems is wide open, and folks are kind of going like the wild. It's like an endless pit, right? I mean, what do you mean it runs out? It doesn't run. I'm just going to spin up another VM, and here we go, you know? So you kind of have to make sure that you understand what resources are being used, how they're using it, and hold folks accountable from the security aspect of it. Because, I mean, you want your DevOps and your SREs to do all that, but you know what? They're not interested in security. They are just trying to get things out the door as fast as they can. And while there'll be some with some security backgrounds and are, you know, being a good stewards, more than likely when push comes to shove, they're getting stuff out the door. And you kind of need security oversight and governance over those systems.
Yeah, that tends to be one of the bigger challenges of this move, and I think we're going to see the fallout of it in this year to come, right? Where people really transitioned into the cloud quick, and they're moving business apps to the cloud. They're, you know, common thing. Let's spin up a, you know, and I'll just use AWS as an example. Let's spin up an EC2 or, you know, instance, and let's spin up an S3 bucket and test, you know, different aspects of how the app operates, and you're using maybe, you know, dummy data or some real data to really check results, but you never take it down, right? So it's unsecured, you put it up, it's there, right? But you're not really, no one's going back and cleaning up, right? So it's almost like, hey, we went to this party and everyone left their red solo cups all over the place. And no one's bothering to pick it up. They're just like, hey, look, red solo cup there, red solo cup there. Like if you ever go to like a national park, right? You can tell where high schoolers came to get drunk, right? Because they never clean up after themselves. Empty beer cans, empty bottles everywhere. Yeah. And so we see the same kind of thing in cloud. And it's interesting. Do you account for that in your security checklist? Is that something that you look for? Kind of like trying to set a policy for that kind of stuff as well?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's something that you have to do, especially as you mentioned earlier, people are just moving to the cloud and security is kind of being left behind a little bit. And so, you know, we have to be ready to take a look at those assets and quickly identify where the high risk is, right? Because that's the first thing you're going to do. You got stuff out there now, and where do I have my highest risk? And let's tackle those first. And the checklist is, you know, what is it doing? What access does it have? And who's running it? And because when you get into the cloud, roles and responsibilities start to get a little nebulous. You know, you got a DevOps guy. You got an SRE guy. Well, where's the networking guy? You know, you got folks setting up firewalls that are like SREs that are not really networking specialists. So not that they couldn't do it, but it's just the expertise behind some of that setup. And especially all of this stuff's new. So like who has experience truly setting up these new environments in a safe manner, right? So you know, you got to get folks trained on some of these technologies because each of the providers has their own unique tools and security consoles to manage your risk there. So it's just part of the checklist, you know, who's doing what, and let's start chipping away at some of these high risk items.
Yes. So let's transition a little bit from the checklist to, I think, the most dreaded word for many CISOs, audit. Oh, audits, I love them. Highly regulated industries, right? Financial services, banking, you've got not five eyes on you, you've got 500 eyes on you, yeah. Right? Everyone's watching what you're doing. They take it extremely, extremely serious. It's part of the critical infrastructure. Even the government looks at it as a critical part of a nation's economy. But when we had on-prem and we were doing audits, it was a little different. Now in the cloud, our data kind of sits somewhere where we may or may not really know ownership of data, meaning it could, you know, if you're working with some of the big box names in cloud, you don't always have complete visibility into, like, you know, some of the smaller data centers that you're able to work with, and you're more able to get, you know, access to facilities and data and so forth. I mean, you and I have spent some time here at the data center facility, the data bank facility in downtown Atlanta. You know, that's it's a little different from the big box names, right? How do you start to even wrap your heads around preparing for an audit in a cloud environment, especially because it's so new, right?
Yeah.
And the area of responsibility is very different. So tough question, I know, but I got to put you on the spot, Max. I know you can answer it.
Yeah, I think that the standards and the auditors and the certification boards are obviously having the same challenges, right? They're trying to figure out, how do we ensure best practices in the cloud when some of this is nebulous, right? How do I can't go touch this equipment. I don't know where this stuff is actually stored. So really the key to me in some of this activity is the auditing and the logging of what is going on behind the scenes. Who's spinning up an instance? What time is it being done? What is it talking to? So you'll find that logging of interactions and actions in that environment are very important. Okay, it gives you timelines. It lets you know who's doing what. And that's my point of the three things of access, assets, and accountability, is you got to track all that to show that you are compliant. You have controls in place to only allow resources access to what they should have access to. And that's where the whole audit trails in the cloud are such key elements of ensuring that you meet the various certification and guidelines. And mind you, NCR, you know, we're a financial services organization. We have hundreds of banks on our platforms. And while at times it may seem like a burden, I look forward to those audits because I like a bunch of eyes looking at my stuff to see where I have gaps, because I may have some blind spots. And at times, you know, that gives you perspective from folks outside of your organization that are looking at this and giving you their perspective. So it just, to me, helps improve your security posture when you have so many eyes looking at you.
Yeah, I completely agree. I dread and enjoy audits like you. I think there's a dreading of it from a perspective of the, you could spend your resources almost at better things sometimes,
yes,
than just audits. But at the same time, you welcome them because you're getting a different point of view sometimes, and you're getting different pairs of eyes looking at different things, and that kind of helps you better kind of evaluate where you are, because they don't know what other people have told you. So if you're hearing the same thing four times, you go, okay, this needs to move up my priority list. It's obviously right. Something that I thought I could, you know, maybe put it on the slow path, but I've got a fast path this into business, or other stuff where people go, that's not of interest, and you go, yeah, we're spending way too much resources here. People aren't really paying attention to it as well. Not to say that compliance and auditing dictates security, but it's a kind of, it helps you understand the trends of the industry, right? And right. What our peers, our CISO peers and our security peers from other organizations we work with are looking for right now. And it kind of helps you set a silent trend line over concerns.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, I think, you know, that's the one thing in security is the sharing of these best practices. And obviously these organizations help filter that down to those of us that are running and supporting these live systems. So it's good. It's feedback across the organization and from our other partners in the security space that help drive some of these best practices, because they're on the boards, they're on the committees that are supporting the evolution and the evolvement of some of these practices to meet the threats that we're encountering, which are changing every day, right? I mean, it's amazing how quickly these threat actors change tactics along the way. And to your point, we have limited resources. You're going to focus where the high risks are first, right? And then if tactics change and techniques change, then you're going to have to adjust to meet the threats.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Let's talk a little bit about, though, the difference between a traditional audit and a cloud audit, because I think there's even auditors don't quite understand yet how to audit a cloud a fully cloud native or cloud based company anymore, right? Because a lot of the auditors, whether we like it or not, come from accounting firms, and they could have some experience, but predominantly their experience is around governance, right? So they come with the Excel spreadsheets with kind of like the checkmark list that I like to call it. And there's nothing wrong with it, right? I'm not dismissing it for people listening. That's not what I'm trying to say, but it's a lot of it isn't up to discretion, right? And it kind of ends up creating a barrier, because while you're going through an audit and you're dealing with maybe, you know, what cloud provider do you use? And let's say, for the sake of our example, we'll use AWS, right? We're not endorsing AWS by any means, and we're not dismissing them. We're just using them for the sake of the example, just to be clear, right? They go, well, what AWS center are you using? What region? And you're like, well, we use all regions. Well, but how do you know which, you know, for what client, which, and those questions kind of get in there, and it creates a level of complexity that maybe on the on-prem didn't really exist. Where do you think the differences lie, and how do we kind of, you know, fill in that gap currently that exists between the auditors and the auditees when it comes to this, you know, kind of cloud transformation, and especially from a security perspective?
Yeah, I would say, as you mentioned, different auditors have their certain knowledge and skill sets as it relates to cloud. So it's also new to them. But there's a little education process that has to take place during those sessions, especially if it's your first audit. I think the first one's probably the hardest. You've got auditors that don't know your systems. They're just getting familiar with the architecture. Where's data residing? And it's kind of a learning experience with the auditor to share some of the differences of, you know, hey, you've done our data centers. This is how it differs from our on-prem. And here are our controls. So here are the controls. So I kind of use this is what they were on-prem, and here we are now in the cloud. Now, I know you mentioned when you're cloud only, you don't have that baseline to work from. For us, that's what we use, is we have existing controls, and how do we map those to the cloud? And some of them will change, right? Because some of those controls aren't relevant. Or we may even have better controls, which is really, I think, the benefit long-term as we go to the cloud. I think there are a lot of benefits and controls and tools there that make security better. But obviously, you got to learn them. You got to know how to use them. And so I think that's the important aspect of it. It's a learning process with the auditor. I mean, especially the first time around.
Yeah, it's so true, though. It's the idea of controls from an on-prem environment, which was, you know, a lot of times hardware reliant rather than software reliant, yep, to moving to a software-based security approach, which, you know, I don't know how old school you are, but I think we're all kind of a little used to that shiny box, right? We don't say a big shiny box for, like, that's not a term that CISOs use because we made it up. We were used to getting a shiny box, right? Like, you get a shiny box, it gets, you know, comes into your office, and, you know, your team looks at it and go, wow, this is really cool. And, you know, and you go and you plug it in and so forth. And in the cloud, we don't really have that. It's software. It's, you know, deploying different add-ons and different tools there. So before we proceed, though, with the next questions, folks, time to earn your CPE for today's episode, courtesy of our friends over at Checkpoint. The keyword for today is sandblast. SAM. Alpha, November, Delta, Bravo, Lima, Alpha, Sam, and Tango. Sandblast. The link is below in the description of the podcast. Click it, earn your CPE. Again, Sandblast is the keyword. All right, so Max, we go back to the fun part of our discussion here, which is the idea of cloud controls, right? So we kind of shifted from the idea of, you know, how do we transition those controls into the cloud? But cloud controls are different. The tools are different, and different companies use kind of different controls. How do you start, you know, to map and adjust the needed controls from transitioning to the cloud? And what's some of the best practices you could share around that?
Yeah, it's a little tricky, right? I mean, because a lot of folks that are getting exposed to this don't know what those cloud provider controls are and what tools are in place. So there's a learning and there's a training aspect. So I think what's important is the teams that are responsible for this mapping, they got to get trained, right? You got to get them exposure to what is out there in the cloud from a security standpoint. A lot of these big vendors all have security consoles. They have recommended training. So I definitely encourage getting folks up to speed on those quickly, unless they've been doing it a while, but I would suspect most haven't. So once they get their arms around that aspect of the cloud and what they have available to them, they can then go through a process of taking what their controls are today and how does that map to something that's in the cloud. And that could be a basic spreadsheet initially, I've got a SOC 2, I've got, FFIEC controls, I got the NIST, here are my controls, and how does that map going to the cloud? And just put it on a piece of paper, and you may find gaps here, you may have good coverage, but it gives you some way to visualize where your strengths and your weaknesses are. And then from that standpoint, you then start filling those gaps with the understanding of what others control. How can I implement those in the cloud? How can I implement them better? Because more than likely, there are probably better controls or other better ways to do some of the ones we do on-prem in the cloud, because it's all software-based, right? It's much easier. And the other part is visibility. I think cloud and their tools and controls give you a lot of visibility to what is occurring, and we need to take advantage of that aspect of the cloud security tools.
Yeah, that's a great point that you bring up there, which is the cloud visibility, right? Because there's so many, what's the right term I'm looking for, Max? I think there's so many different ways where your data can get lost in the cloud, right? And just, it's different from, I think, an on-prem server. And for those who are youngsters who are listening to us, who are just cloud people who, started 3-4 years ago in this business, or, started in developing stuff free on the cloud, they don't kind of understand the idea of memory on a server, right? the idea that you could just go on a server and you can be like, John has loaded 20 gigs worth of data on this server that's just test data. You're like, John, what are you doing? Right? And the cloud, sometimes the only way for us to see it is through billing, right? If you don't have the right visibility in place. And we don't get to see the billing because billing doesn't fall on our shoulders.
That's correct.
Right? So even that visibility doesn't exist to us, which creates a whole new set of challenges in the cloud. I'll tell you one thing I love about that, and that's the beauty of the cloud visibility, is deploying the right cloud visibility tools as a CISO gives you so much peace of mind.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
We can't protect something you don't know about.
Right? Well, Think of asset inventory, right? I think we had that at one of the roundtables a few years ago when we could still get together, right? Like, we were talking about a little bit about, asset discovery and data discovery within a system. Traditionally, that's very difficult. And the cloud's made it, I think it's time-saving, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I could go look back at some of my prior roles as a CISO and, coming in there and they, well, how secure are we? I hear from the CEO, okay, oh yeah, let me go check. And I couldn't get an inventory of our assets. And I said, I don't know how secure we are because we don't even know what we have, right? I mean, that's such an important aspect of security and risk, is you got to know what you got, where's the data. And without that, you're running blind. And I think a lot of the cloud, the big cloud vendors today understand that, and a lot of their tools out the box give you a lot of that information. You just need to know what to do with it, right? So I think cloud providers, they set up this, here's all the tools, now you have to go and
analyze it, and now go find people who know how to do it, which creates I'll share something on the show. Not a lot of people do, but I've been doing all of the AWS cloud security certs through their academy.
Cool.
Because I think as a CISO, it's critical for me to know what my cloud security team is telling me and whether or not the decisions that they're making are the right decisions based on our overall strategy, right? And that's very difficult for people who don't, I don't want to say for people who don't sit at the top of the helm, but you know, when you sit at the top of the pyramid, you have a view looking down. And sometimes the people who are midway through your pyramid, you want them to see everything, but they don't. They're very, they're in a compartment and that's where they're at. And so, and it's not a good thing or a bad thing. It's just the way business is. So it'll be very, it's very interesting to take those, because you do realize there's a ton of security tools within the traditional aspects of cloud. But there's also, if you understand it correctly, the HR issue gets resolved very, very fast, because I'm able to define the roles a lot better.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. I mean, that's great to hear that you're doing that, because I mean, it helps. I mean, that's what leadership's about, right? You can't help your team and you can't build that trust of your team that when they bring you issues that you understand what they're asking for, right? I think, to your point, the higher up on the totem pole, you kind of move away from the tactical aspects that are going down below. And I agree with you. That's a great thing to do. It's something that I strive to do with my team. Is I want to know what they do and how they do it, because I can't help them if I don't understand what they're doing.
Right. And that's the beauty of our path, right? Like hearing your story of getting into cyber, right? You come from the developer side. Like for you, like if we started talking about SolarWinds now and software supply chain, you'd just you'd be all over it. You'd be like, all right, let's talk about the CICD, right? And this whole, you know, JetBrains thing. And is, you know, how do you use third-party software companies and CICD tools that your developers don't really think about? And a lot of times security isn't even exposed to them. Like it could take you, you know, depending on the company's depending on your diplomatic relations within your organization, it could take you 3 months to figure out what the CICD tool that most of them use, or it could take you 3 years.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, how good of a diplomat are you?
Yeah, I hope to be a pretty good diplomat. I mean, I ask the questions, and I think that's, for CISOs, they don't have to be experts in everything, but they got to have a broad range of knowledge of technology, because if you don't ask the right question, you're not going to get the answer. And
I have a great example for our U.S. audience, right? CISOs were like head coaches of an NFL team, right? People don't understand this, but an NFL team has, I think, what, like 14 coaches under the head coach. You have a defensive and offensive coordinator. You've got a line coach for the O-line. You've got a line coach for the D-line. You've got a linebacker coach, a secondary coach. You've got a quarterback coach, a running back coach, a receiver coach. You've got a special teams coach, punt return, kick return. Then you've got a kicking and a punting coach. Like, and then you've got strategists and all of that. And the head coach has got to know a little bit about everything that, you know, that coach is responsible. You got to know a little bit about the O-line and D-line, right? But you know, you've got to know a little bit about every part of the team. You got to have a touch of, you don't have to be an expert at it, because I think it's been proven that someone who's very defensive minded, who's never been on the offensive side, fails, right? And people who come from strictly offense and don't focus on defense fail, because you're too compartmentalized. Sorry, I'm having a hard time speaking today. In that aspect, so that's how you are. To me, you're the Bill Belichick, right? For those who don't know, Google it. Max is Bill Belichick, because you've got every little piece of it. You know so much about the business, from development side to operations to audit to governance. Like you have all of that, so you're able to really sit there and kind of know. And you know, you don't have to be an offensive lineman to be a good offensive lineman coach, right? But you got to know how your O-line works.
Yeah, and to me, I think it's important. It helps build trust in your team, and it also, when you got to call BS, you call BS when somebody's, you know, trying to blow smoke, and you say that's not right, that's not how it works, you know, go deeper, go back and come back to me with the right solutions, because I know that's not accurate. So you can challenge your team, right? And that's the beauty of it, because you want to stretch them in their thought processes. And you and I don't want to date ourselves. I mean, we come from the time when our computers were very large, and you had to know many pieces of it, how it worked. And to me, it was kind of a benefit to us, because we experienced all that. And these folks have it, right? They can't. That time is gone. But we can share, you know, those experiences with them, so they can understand that this wider knowledge is much more important to know.
We used to have to operate a computer. So you guys see the size of this box with a floppy disk this size, just to turn it on, because that's where the operating system sat. Yeah. And you put it into the computer, right? And you would hope that, you know, it would work, because if it didn't work, you know, you put it in a little sleeve between two pieces of paper. I mean, when you come from the inception of technology, you tend to appreciate and admire advanced technology like cloud, right? Like, you and I look at cloud and we're like super ecstatic, but we're like, my, this is amazing.
Yeah. I know. I can do what? I mean, I can just spin up a VM here in about 2 seconds and install the app. I mean, it's power. I mean, it's very powerful. And that's why you'll see, as digital transformation and movement to the cloud occurs, I mean, it's going to change our society on the things that we can do, the things that we will be doing, both in all kinds of industries. It's just hugely impactful of what the things that are going to be accomplished because of this.
Let's talk a little bit about, as we kind of wrap up the episode though, risk management and cloud. How do you start to, how do you align your risk management policies with cloud, especially in a multi-cloud environment, right? Because we've been predominantly talking about a single cloud provider, but that's not realistic in today's business world. In fact, you know, it's kind of, you know, like, you're going to be in a multi-cloud environment. You're going to need to do that. And that kind of changes the way you have to manage your risk. How do you do that? What's some of your best practices around multi-cloud environments and security risk management?
It's a challenge. I mean, especially because each of the big players does it a little differently. But once again, I try to go back to the nuts and bolts of how is each one, you know, where is that line that they draw that, this is me and this is you. And I typically go real quick to their SOC 2 reports just to kind of see, this is what they're responsible for. This is how they keep up their certifications. And I look at that and then I work my way into, okay, well, these are the aspects that I have to manage and control. So that helps identify where the risks are, if we have gaps as far as sustaining those other controls that we need to support. But I like to go to that line, that contractual line, as to I'm doing this. And I think folks they get used to, well, it's the cloud and Google's taking care of it. Well, you know, that's not really true. They're taking care of some of it. And I think that's where it comes out in audits, right? Because, you know, we use third-party vendors and some of them are all cloud-based. And I go, so what are your controls? Oh, we just leverage the providers. And I'm like, well, that's to me is a red flag, because that's telling me that you don't understand where that line is crossed and what responsibilities you are for. And to me, it's very important while you're in the cloud, your organization, a company, if you need to be SOC 2, you need to have your own SOC 2 and not rely on the cloud vendor SOC 2, because that's not fully and truly acceptable in a financial services environment. I mean, because it just shows that you're depending on the cloud and you're not doing anything. And that's not accurate. There are controls that you need to abide by, because the cloud vendor says, I only do this and you must do the rest.
Yeah, there's an aspect to a SOC 2 report that I enjoy and another aspect that I absolutely despise. I'll tell you something, when I audit others, you know, when we're doing our cyber checklist, when someone answers me, you know, we're in the cloud, I automatically realize, like, all right, we're going down this road, right? Like, you know, this road, it's the path that's most commonly walked and it's the most complex path. And yet everyone goes down this path, right? And you're like, there's such an easier way to do this. Like most cloud providers folks have like so many free security resources in terms of understanding what controls to put in place just for the basics of your cloud.
Sure.
You know, from encryption and multi-factor authentication and all these different things beyond going out and buying and adding different tools to your cloud environment, right? So like just if you're a small company, you're just getting started, use those. I mean, you and I never want to tell someone who's up and coming that could be a great partner to our business units, we don't want to do business with you because you're not good at security, right? Because one thing you and I both know is that security is hard.
Yeah.
You know, people don't want to admit it, but it's hard. It's, we see how difficult it is, and it's a challenge, and it's, we want to help others. That's the beauty of our community.
Yeah.
Right. So like, let us help you.
Yeah. And I would add to your point of the vendor, the cloud vendors today, it's very clear to me that they take security seriously. I mean, you look at all of the audits that they all, and certifications they have, and all of the tools that they put in your hands to use. So there really was a lot of thought put into, you know, if I'm in the cloud, you know, they all hear it. Everybody's, oh, you're in the cloud, it's not secure. And they've made some huge efforts to provide us the tools and the trainings to be effective in the cloud and be secure. And we just need to take advantage of those. And to your point, some of them don't cost you anything. It's all part of the service. You just got to learn it.
Right. Brilliant. It is. Max, thank you so much for your time. We're a little over on today's episode, but I do appreciate it. I know that in some of our previous shows that we've done together, we've gone for an hour and plus. So, today, we're only over by about 2 minutes. So thank you so much for taking the time to join us. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in to today's show. We'll have another episode coming up real soon. Remember, today's keyword, sandblast to earn your one CPE. Until next time, folks, thanks so much for tuning in. Max Garcia, thanks so much for joining the show.
Thank you, James.
We'll be back. Pleasure. We'll be back with more, folks. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening, and make sure to subscribe to our podcast and share it with your friends and colleagues.